I was working for cabaret shows for like 10 years and those questions was like normalized.
Yeah, yeah.
Like every time a new client will come, they ask you, it's just like, it's like, what's your name?
Hello, my name is Kay Anderson and you are listening to Lost Spaces, the podcast that mourns the death of queer nightlife. Aww. Every episode, I talk to a different person about a venue from their past, the memories that they created there, and the people that they used to know. So this week, it's our first ever trip to Japan. And if you know anything about me, you'll know how excited I am about that. And we are not going to just any old bar. Oh, no. We are going to a hostess club. Now, host and hostess clubs are fairly unique to Japan. So if you have not heard of them before, the long and short of it, all you really need to know is that they are a type of cabaret bar that provides entertainment like a floor show, but they also employ people to provide attentive conversation and maybe a little bit of flirting with their paying customers. So kind of like going to a bar and getting a boyfriend or a girlfriend experience for the night. Good, right? And showing us around our first hostess bar is Tiffany Rossdale, the self-proclaimed mega socialite of Tokyo's nightlife and host of the Breakfast with Tiffany podcast. Tiffany first moved to Japan from the Philippines in the late 90s to live with her mum, who had settled there a few years prior. And before long, she had started her journey towards nightlife queendom. Queendom, is that a word? Working as a hostess at Mr. Lady, a hostess bar in Tokyo that predominantly hired trans Filipino women. And I am fascinated by this subject, so I ask lots of intrusive questions in my inimitable style, such as, what do you do when you have two or three regulars show up at the same time and you have to juggle all of them together? Like, how stressful is that? We also got surprisingly deep talking about our relationship with our parents and how that evolved over the years, and sometimes for the good, sometimes for the not so good. And I also got to learn all about the beautiful and strong women that took Tiffany under their wing when she was just starting out. So there is lots in here that I think you're going to love. Why don't we get into it?
When I was still young, very young, like in my high school day, I've seen trans women who join beauty pageants. And that's all I've seen. Like, I've never seen any representation in the media, any representation in anything. So I thought, like, beauty pageant, I don't want to do that as a career, right? Although I admire and adore, like, the beautiful trans women in the Philippines. But I thought, like, maybe, you know, accept the opportunity that my mom offering me to come to Japan. And that's how it started. And I came to Japan. And it was really funny because when I came here, my mom was saying that you have to work in a factory. And I'm like, okay, like I never worked in my life. So I was like, okay, I'll try. And I didn't like that job at all. And I told my mom, I don't want to do this the whole time. And then she's like, well, what do you want to do then? And I told her, I've seen women, trans women in the Philippines that they come to Japan and work as entertainers, but I don't know where to find them. And she doesn't want to support me because she knows that I'm unique and different. But she doesn't really want to support that I'm going to transition and I'm going to do this and that. She was against it. She told me that your dad, your stepfather, like, doesn't know about you. So living with them too at the same time, I felt like not being myself. I felt like trapped. I'm trying to be like, I don't want it to be, so.
But that is interesting, though, because the way you talk about it is that you were comfortable enough to be open with your mom.
Yes, because my mother knew ever since I was a child that I was different. But she didn't want to approve it. She didn't want to accept it. But she knew as I grew up, even though I didn't live with her, she knew that I was really not like the typical a boy or like that, you know, like normal. So
ooh, don't say normal. We don't say the word normal on this show.
Don't know. No, sorry.
There's no such thing.
Don't. Sorry. Exactly. I'm sorry. So yeah, like when I came to live with her as an adult, starting to really wanted to find myself and be who I mm-hmm. am, she was having a hard time to accept everything.
Well, the reflection that I'm trying to make is that generally when that happens, mm-hmm. like when you are around an adult when you're growing up and the adult mm-hmm. doesn't approve or tries to shame you or in like non-verbal ways tries to control your behavior or stop you from being who you are, lots of children will soak that up and learn very early on not to talk about things, not to express certain parts of their identity. And I think it's really interesting that you still felt able to be like, hey, mom, this is what I want to do.
I completely agree. So that's what actually happened to me when I was still in the Philippines. And then during my high school, when she came back, because of I'm graduating high school, and she came back and she saw me like really change. Mm-hmm. Like my hair was longer, I'm more flamboyant and all that. But we had a talk about it. And even though we did have a conversation about it, but I think it's because of lack of understanding and lack of her knowledge about how to raise me as who I want to be is the reason why she didn't want to support me.
Mm-hmm. Because it's easier if you just followed the norms of society.
Exactly. So when I came here and then lived with them, and then after that, I told her, like I said earlier, I wanted to work where all these trans women worked. And then she finally agreed, and then she brought me to this place, this cabaret place where all these trans women work.
Your mum took you to your job interview. I'm sorry.
I know, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And going to my job interview, I really felt like going to a place like a Disneyland, like all these beautiful girls, like everywhere, like fancy clothes, glittering, the, you know, the show and everything. And after the show, we get the chance to communicate with the girls. And then she was having conversations with the girls. And
how embarrassed were you at this point?
I wasn't embarrassed at all. I'm actually just like happy that she is starting to get understanding about who I want
to
be.
So you weren't like, mom, shut up.
Because she doesn't know anything, right? So she's just like, oh, okay. Like I see while she's having conversations with the trans women in that cabaret show that she's starting to really understand that, oh, there's a world for her, like this kind of world that she wants to live. And then when we went back home, she was convinced. She was 100% convinced. I'm like, if that's what you want to do, if that's where you want to go, I will separate you. I will rent you a different place.
Wow.
Not, you can't do that in front of your dad. Wow. Because she doesn't want to still show my stepfather. Yeah. So then you can do whatever you want. And I said, like, yes, I want to do it. So that's how it started.
So just like quickly one step back. Do you remember any of the questions she was asking when she was talking to the women who worked there?
That's a great question. I didn't actually thought about that. But I think it's about maybe a few of them, like, where would you buy the clothes? Like, for example, because I don't have, of course, like girly clothes, right? She was probably asking, where do you buy all those clothes that you guys are wearing? Like, you know, how does she start? And then giving her like tips and advices. And she actually went to the stores where the girls like told, like, you should go to this store because it's like cheap and you can get like mini stuff there. Aww. And then we went together. So that time, actually, I felt like I was accepted by my mother, you know, that moment when she wanted me to work and when she allowed me to work in that place.
And I love how practical she is. Like, we're going to need to do this, 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 and this. We're going to need to go to this place to buy clothes. We're going to need to set you up an apartment here and then off you go.
Exactly.
So then you got the job, I'm assuming.
Yes, of course, I got the job.
Do you remember like the anticipation leading up to the first shift you had?
Yes, it was a lot of learning. And I was so grateful and I was so lucky that all these women in that cabaret were very friendly and were very helpful for me. I'm newbie. I don't have anything. So I'm getting all these advices, and it was just a learning process for me to understand like how they work, mm-hmm. what's the rules, mm-hmm. you know, because they have certain rules. For example, in a cabaret places, you're not allowed to go out with Japanese men,
yeah.
like unless the club told you that you can go out with them and have drinks or have dinner. But unless they don't tell you, you're not allowed to meet them privately. But a lot of girls, they do that, of course, when they become like veterans. But for me, they all tell me all this like, you know, rules in the beginning, so which was really fascinating.
Yeah, and you don't want to break the rules early on, because if you get kicked out.
Of course, you don't want to break the rules. Yeah.
So what was the first night then? Like what happened? Talk me through.
Oh, wow. I love that you really bring me back to this memories. So I remember, because I'm fresh, right? I'm a newbie. Mm-hmm. And all these clients that's coming to the cabaret, a lot of them are like, they've been there for so many times. And they support the girls. That's why they come often. Mm-hmm. So the first night, the manager of the cabaret, they would put me on all these clients who has been for long, like different tables. And they would always introduce me as the, oh, she's new and she's still like learning everything. And all the girls would, you know, like introduce me to the clients. And because I don't speak Japanese too.
Still?
At all when I came here. You mean now I can speak?
Oh, okay,
of course,
you speak now.
I can.
Okay,
of course,
good,
of course.
Okay,
I was talking about like when the first time I came. Mm-hmm. And then all the girls, obviously, they were hired to be an entertainer to come to Japan. That they have that background to learn mm-hmm. the Japanese. And I don't have mm-hmm. anything. So I was just starting to learn Japanese as well. So it was kind of like learning all the rules at the same time, meeting all these people, and then like trying to understand what they're trying to tell me. So it's a lot of things going on. But I like it too, because it gives me, it's challenge, right? Yeah. Like I think I like challenges. And it also inspired me because I've seen the most requested girls. They spoke Japanese fluently. And they know how to, you know, how to communicate, how to entertain the clients. So it really inspired me how they work. And I thought like, oh, I want to be like them. I want to do like what she mm-hmm. does, you know. So that motivated me to keep going and, yeah, and continue
so,
on.
So on that first night, you were just assigned to float around.
Yes, float around, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you remember any of the conversations you had that first night?
Who... So this was back then, mm-hmm. okay? Like, imagine back then, it's still okay to ask you private questions.
Oh.
Yeah. They would ask you right away, like, do you still have this? Like, you know, like all those questions. And it was normal mm-hmm. for all the girls to be asked like that.
Mm.
And obviously, of course, now if you ask those questions, it's very, like, not good. But yeah, back then, we're okay to talk about it, and we're open to respond to those questions as well.
But were you okay with talking about that, or did you just go along with it because that was what was expected of you?
Very, very great question. I think because I've seen from the other girls, they were responding to those questions. That's why I thought like, that's normal. That was normal. Mm. I think if I say like, oh, I can't answer that question, the clients will find you boring.
Yes, of course. Yeah, yeah.
Some girls, the way they respond is like in a humor way. Mm. And I was still learning. I was still like trying to understand how to respond to those questions. And yeah, like I was working for cabaret shows for like 10 years, and those questions was like normalized.
Yeah, yeah.
Like every time a new client will come, they ask you, it's just like, what's your name?
Yeah. And I guess like you just have a standard response that you tell everyone after a while.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because the terms that they use, either shemale, ladyboy, Mr. Lady, which is the place that I used to work, we didn't mind being called during that time those terms, which is now very interestingly in this new generation. And when you said those words, is very, you know,
very
not, it's yeah. not good, right? Yeah, I know.
So I want to talk about the word ladyboy,
mm-hmm.
because to me that is a term that is often associated with Southeast Asia and trans women from those countries. But quite rightfully, it's fallen out of fashion over the last however many years. Do you remember the first time you ever heard someone having a problem with that term?
I think I had a problem with that word myself, not even from other girls. Because when we go out, for example, when you go partying and you get to call by that word, and I didn't want to be called that word before. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I don't mind that word when it's like I'm working, not in my private life.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. Unpack that a little for me. Why?
Because I think during my private life, it's like people are shaming you when they use that word, lady boy. And I always feel like embarrassed in front of everyone if I get called in a public space where I don't know anyone, and then they call you lady boy. But when I'm working, if people say, oh, you're a lady boy, and when I'm in working mode, like again, like going back to working mode, I feel like, well, we're in a cabaret show. I'm a lady boy and I work and it's fine, but not in my private life.
Ah, and because if it's being used, it's being used in a celebratory way in that
exactly,
space.
Exactly.
It's a funny relationship that you have with a client, right? Because it's not as though you're just talking to someone in a bar. There's this set expectation from the very beginning, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And also some, like, the managers and the owners of the cabaret places, if they know that you're not answering them in the right way, they would tell you, kind of like training you in a way, like, you should do this. Or suggestion, yeah.
This doesn't sound fun. So, like, are they, like, listening in? Are they, like, behind you, listening into your conversation?
Yes. Oh. Especially if you're new, especially if they see, like, something's weird going on, they're, like, go around you and, like, just stand up, like, right next to, you know, like, try to listen to what you guys having, you know, talk and all that. So
That would make it even harder for me to have a conversation because I'd be, like, terrified of what feedback I was going to get later.
You get used to it and just like, this is what I do, this is what I respond. I make them drinks and, you know, it's like automatic. Like Japanese people, they love doing things
in order.
In order.
But then, okay, so when that happens, like it's predictable, it's understandable, you know what's expected of you, but does it become boring?
Yes. It became boring for me after 10 years. It took me a while to decide to quit because I in the beginning, I thought like that's the only thing I can do. It's either being an entertainer or I met girls, trans women here in Japan, who works for the brothels. And I don't want to be in the brothels. I thought like if I'm going to go to brothels or if I'm going to do work, sex working, I'd rather work this kind of work. So I focused there and I thought like even though it's boring, I earn money. I love dancing, I love performing, so I do what I love doing. But then, after 10 years, it comes to the point that it gets boring, like what you said. It gets boring because it's like a cycle every time, right? Mm-hmm. And that's made me really realize that this is not my purpose. This is not what I wanted to do the whole time. And plus, realizing also that there's always a new, younger trans woman will come and then work. They get their attention, and as you grow older, you get lesser attention. So,
So then let's go back. So this first night, were there any performances that night? Do you remember them?
Yes. When me and my mother went first time, right before I work, there was this one trans woman who I was just so mesmerized by her beauty and the way how flawlessly she moved. And every time she performed, not just during that night when me and my mom came, when I started working, I always look at her, and not just me, like the other girls too, because she's so beautiful and she's the way she danced flawlessly. And even the clients like look at her like you admire her, you adore her. So I always look forward to seeing her, and I wanted to know how she moved, and I want to practice, of course, like I wanted to put in me when I started doing the rehearsals because I can't be on the show right away. Of course, I didn't practice wearing heels while performing, so it took me a while to be a part of the show. So I have to look at her every time and see like how she moves and how, you know, and all that. So, yeah.
So hang on. So when you started working there, this was just one of the first times you were in heels.
Yes, yes.
Wow. Straight into the deep end.
Yeah, it wasn't easy. It wasn't
you were just
easy
like
in the beginning.
Wobbling around the place.
I know. Yeah, wobbling around.
Oh, that's so sweet. So then, okay, so how long then until you actually got on the stage and got that chance to perform?
I think it took me about 3 or 4 months before they put me on the show. But I have to train every day. Every day they would train me, they would rehearse with me mm-hmm. until they said like, oh, you can be a part of the show now. So.
And do you remember what your first number was?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I did. I just did. So funny like how you like asked me and then I remembered right away. So the show, it was a 40 or 50 minute show. Mm. But each has a segment. There's like a comedy, there's sexy, there's this traditional Japanese, and there's this one traditional Korean. It's so funny, like I don't know why they have a traditional Korean. So
performed by a Filipino. Or...
I know. Yeah. I know, yeah. All Filipino. There's no Korean trans woman in that cabaret show. So we were wearing Korean dresses and the fans, we were using this a massive mm-hmm. fans, like you're doing this massive circle, like how do you do like this floating with the fans and all that. Yeah, so I was doing that show. That was the first show that they put me in. And I always loved performing ever since I was a kid. So I thought like that moment, I felt like, oh, I was on the stage finally. I like all these lights and, you know, like seeing all these people from the stage. It was a really great experience in the beginning.
And most importantly, you didn't drop the fan.
I don't think so.
Okay, good.
I think I did it well.
Because that's terrifying when there's props involved.
Ugh. I know. Yeah.
And then I want to talk more about the sisterhood. That's my word. You never said mm-hmm. sisterhood, but I'm imposing mm-hmm. that on you. Mm-hmm. How did that evolve over the time you were there?
I think Filipino community in Japan, mm-hmm. I think not just in Japan, I think everywhere else in the world, when Filipinos are seeing each other, they really help each other. That's what I love about Filipinos. They help each other. They taught me like to do this and that, like, because mm-hmm. I didn't have any idea. I don't know anything, right? Like I don't know anything about performing in a cabaret show. So I love that they walk me through like all these rules, all this that I have to know, the advices, where can I get my surgeries, like all this. Mm-hmm. So I thought like it really helped because back in the days, we didn't have social media. We didn't have resources that we can get. We can buy hormones and all that. So they were very helpful in my process in the beginning. Although there were also women who is, I don't know if I will term them jealous, because I can stay here longer than them. Yeah. A lot of them, they would come to Japan for 3 months, 6 months mm-hmm. for the entertainment visa. But they know that my visa, I live here because of my parents. I have a family visa. I was supported by my family. So there were other women who I felt like they might be jealous of the fact that I can live here and stay here. So they didn't care. They didn't want to talk to me. They didn't want to, you know, engage and have conversations with me, which I totally understand. But majority of the girls were very helpful. So I'm really grateful to be able to have that community in the beginning and to understand more about how the community works. So,
and was there ever like a competitive element in respect of the clients?
Exactly. That's why the some of the girls, they don't want to talk to me because they need to work hard to get a lot of clients mm-hmm. in order for them to come back here. Mm-hmm. For me, it's easy for me to just like get clients and then like I can be here the whole time and the clients would know that I can be here whenever they want,
because
right?
Because like, their visa is reliant on the cabaret theater to... Oh, okay.
Exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you have less pressure mm-hmm. on you in that respect.
Exactly.
Okay. That creates strange dynamics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I didn't understand it in the beginning. Until later on, I thought like, oh, okay, that's how it works. Because they have to go back and the process of auditioning in the Philippines to get selected mm-hmm. before they come here, it's such a long process. They have to be trained as dancers, you have to be trained as singers.
Oh,
and then
wow.
like, it's a lot of process before they come here. So, yeah.
Oh, and you kind of cut the line. Sorry, I did.
Yes, but I
cheated.
Yes, but that's the. That's, yeah, so that's like some of the girls, they couldn't probably like.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, not that that's fair on you to impose that. Like, it's just circumstance mm-hmm. and it's nothing within your control necessarily. But mm-hmm. I can understand where that came in because they felt that pressure.
Exactly. And also, I think my case is very rare that I mm-hmm. being able to live in Japan and not worry about visa. And most of the girls, they always have to do that process.
Yeah. So did they have, were they only able to get like 3 month visa and then they had to go back and then they had to come back and it was that process?
Yes, every time.
Oh, that's really destabilizing.
Yeah, and not just the same place. Sometimes it would get requested in a different, not even Tokyo, not even in nearby Tokyo. Sometimes like really, you know, like far away. So when you're trying to understand that kind of process, it's very stressful, right? Like it's a long process. And at the same time, you're going to get put in this really like nowhere. Yeah, I didn't even have the opportunity to go to like the very rural areas of Japan. How is it like? Mm. So I don't even know what they're experiencing when they get to be picked and work there.
Yeah. And it's just not being able to make any plans about your life because you have no idea what you're going to be doing in 3 months' time.
Mm-hmm.
That's really difficult. And then you went, I was going to say journey and I hate that word. Let me rethink how I phrase this.
Okay.
So you found your feet and you learned how to be a hostess. Oh, is hostess the right word?
Yes. Is it the right word? Okay. Yeah, hostess, yeah.
Learn how to be a hostess. What do you remember most from those early years there?
There is so much. In the beginning, I didn't understand why would married men will come to places like hostess mm-hmm. bars or cabaret bars. I thought, like, why would they do that? It's like cheating mm-hmm. on mm-hmm. with their wives. But then working for a long period of time, you begin to understand that some of them, they will come with their wives, especially with transgender women. It's more of like they go there because they wanted to be entertained. They wanted to connect with the girls. They wanted to support the girls. And then majority of the men that goes there, they go there for comforting, like to talk to the girls. Because you don't have sex with them, right? You just like you just talk to them.
And flirt a little, yeah.
And flirt a little, yeah. So I think they needed someone to talk to. They needed someone to listen to what's happening in their lives. And once they also trust you, they would say their private stories and they become more closer to you. And part of it also is like they drink alcohol. Japanese people, they would not open unless they drink alcohol. So once they drink alcohol, they start to like, you know, let loose a little bit and then like they start talking to you and then more of their private life. So I really realized later on that Japan is not, if you say, why not go to therapy if you have a problem? For them, it's a no-no. They don't even talk about therapy. So I think going to these type of places helps them to go on with their lives. So have someone to talk to, have someone to share what's going on in their lives.
But that's a lot for you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there's also this weird dynamic where you can't be very you can't challenge them very much, can you? You can't be like, ugh, you've been talking about this to me for 6 months.
Can't.
Why don't you just sort it out? You've got to be like, oh, I understand. Oh, yeah.
Yes. You always have to compliment them and you always, because at the end of the day, they're still clients, right? You don't have the right to put them down or like,
oh yeah, but I'm like, I know I've phrased it in a funny way. I don't mean like to be like rude to them and be like, you're an idiot. But even to just be like, oh, you've talked about this a lot. I think maybe you should do this or like you need to think about this because that's probably crossing a line in that client performer relationship, isn't it?
Exactly. It is. Only sometimes when you get like super close to them, you can actually say something a little bit. You can try and like say like, maybe you should do this. Maybe you can do that. Like, but majority, I think you're not really,
But you have to just have to be nice. That must be exhausting to be like, oh yeah, I love hearing about this again.
that's also part of why I quit the job, because it's like what you said, it's very exhausting for me. And you take all this energy from them. And I didn't know like how energy is so important. I just realized it like after. Yeah. You actually absorb their energy.
But is there also, I mean, again, the dynamics are off because there's an imbalance in the relationship. But when you're having these deep conversations with them and finding out so much about them, were there any that you caught feelings for?
You mean like feelings for?
Like a crush, or you got like confused about how you felt about them because of all the information that was swirling around in your head.
The majority of the relationships I had with Japanese men happened during those times. So I think only a few that I met privately, like not like during when I was working. Japanese have so much rules. Even up until now, I'm still learning because the culture is so different. Even though living here for 28 years now, I still have difficulty understanding some of your, you know, like their traits, their thoughts. And I think it's not just in 1 year or in 28 years, you'll get to know how Japanese people really think. I don't know, it's so many things are different the way they think. And I love living here. I always loved living in Japan. So I thought like, if I can understand them deeply, I can probably I have appreciation living here. I thought like, if I get to know them more, I think I would not think about those negative issues that's going on in this country.
And so these relationships that you had with men, that sounds really formal the way I said it. These relationships, I'm going to say something here that's based on my biases and my assumptions, so absolutely call me on it. But when you're starting that relationship in this unequal footing, so he is the client, you are the hostess, and you've built your relationship on the fact that you've been subservient to him, for want of a better word, how do you then transition into being your own autonomous human being?
Ooh, very fascinating question. Yeah. So most of the girls that I've seen, including myself, I've also, their client, they came to your bar, you met them, you liked them, they take you out to dinner, and then you decided to have a relationship. For me, back then, I always tell them, before we go to this relationship, can we have more of a clear understanding that you're not going to come to the place anymore? And then if you're going to come, at least respect the boundary of me working. Because if they see me flirting with other men, it's not going to be good for me, right? So I'd rather not them to come. Because most Japanese men, even though you're in a relationship with them, a lot of the girls in the hostess industry, they will come and then they will get jealous. They see like their girlfriend is like flirting with other guys. And I didn't like that. I didn't want that to happen. And it happened to me too. So after realizing that that could happen, the next relationship that I had, I always had a clear boundary that if they're going to come, they're not going to interrupt, or like they're not going to do anything that
sit and sulk in the corner. Know. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
But when you've started your relationship in a way where you've been consoling and agreeable and kind and friendly and very like, tell me more. How do you then become a real person outside of the bar?
I think just being myself and not thinking about that I have to work. I don't probably talk to them more about what's happening in the bar, what's happening in my work. I'd rather talk about him, or I'd rather talk about the relationship. I'd rather talk about like what we're fun doing together.
Yeah, of course. But when he sees you for the first time being in a bad mood or disagreeing with him or getting angry, is that weird?
For him or for me?
For him, because he's so used to you being this one-dimensional character.
Right, yeah. I don't think so. I think he also separates that mentality of my work and being in a relationship. Okay. I don't think he thinks that way. I never asked, but maybe I don't ask, because that's a good question. I should have asked them, right? Like, but I don't think, though. I don't think
And I guess my question is more about what you're picking up from him and how that works. Because there is a point where, yeah, like, he's only ever seen you in a certain way, but that way isn't the whole of you. And it's how he reconciles that, and whether there's any teething problems that come from that transition.
I also think that maybe that's like, it affirms him that we're in a relationship. Because you, when you're working, you're just like all this lively and like always positive and always serving the clients. But if you see something different, like my vulnerability, I think that's affirms that like, oh, like she really shows that she likes me, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. And so what happens when you have like a bunch of regulars on the go? Like there's like five or six men who come in every now and then and they like talking to you. And then in one evening, they all come in at the same time. What happens?
Very, very great question. So there are times like it happened, of course. And the Japanese people, they don't really like to compete to each other. Most of them. So some, if they see like they're not going to have a chance to talk to me, they would say like, oh, okay, you're busy, then I will just like come the next evening or the following evening.
Okay.
But there are also men who likes to compete. So to get your attention, they would put like champagnes and bottles and that. And then the managers of the club, like, oh, you have to go back there. They're putting bottles.
Oh, gosh, that's stressful. Is it like in those old TV shows when someone's booked onto two dates in one evening and you're like running from one table to the next table?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
And then whilst you're at one table, you don't want to look as though you're having too much fun, because then the person at the other table is going to get jealous. that's stressful.
Yes.
That's so stressful.
It is stressful.
Oh, human beings are so weird.
I know, but that time, I'd be drinking during that time too. I have to drink, right? Because that's the reason why they drink alcohol with you too. Like, they want you to drink. So instead of like thinking of all this stress is going on, I'd rather be drinking and feel numb about what's going on around me. So that helps with alcohol.
Ooh, that's a heavy thing to say. So was that one of the only things that was getting you through?
And also going out and partying, and my other persona of being a socialite in Tokyo, like partying and going to different clubs, I think that also helped me to escape from that lifestyle.
Escape. That's a big word to use.
Yes. Yeah, it is a big, I agree. It's a big word because it was a lifestyle that I think was ingrained to do every night and I have to adopt. So, yeah.
So far then, when we've been talking about it, it's come across to me as though maybe it's not like the most fun thing in the world, but it didn't seem traumatizing. But now that you said escape, I'm rethinking everything.
No, but absolutely. I think the reason why I'm trying to escape because I didn't want to be traumatized. Because there's so many... When you work in a nightlife industry, there's so much things going on. Not just those things that you mentioned and you ask about, like jealousy. There's so much negativity like going on around that escaping is only the way. Otherwise, you will feel like you're a victim or being traumatized.
So did you enjoy that job?
I did enjoy it in the beginning, I would say. As I go on continuously, I did work because of the money. I thought like the money helped me. Of course, it helped me a lot, like to live in central Tokyo, like having a nice apartment, having the lifestyle that I want. It supported me. So as it goes on, I thought it was just the... I think it's because of the money. But then I realized later on that I learned so much during that journey of, I've learned so much from the experience, from the clients, from people that I got to work with, which I was able to use when I started doing my own entrepreneurial career.
So what was the moment for you then when you were like, oh, no, I have to get out of this?
I think when I had enough of this, you brought it up earlier about the cycle and then you becomes boring. Those gave me a little bit of like, oh, I really think I should start thinking about other things. Also, again, I'm not getting younger. I'm just getting older, and I don't think I'm getting that attention mm-hmm. from the clients mm-hmm. if I'm getting older. I've seen from other girls who get older, like which is older than me, that they're not mm-hmm. happy, and I didn't want to be like that.
And so, what was your plan of getting out? Like, how did you plot it?
I was already starting my entrepreneurial. Like, I've been doing events on the side. I was doing modeling gigs on the side while working for the cabarets and hostessing. And right before I quit, I thought, like, this will probably help me with the lifestyle I still want to continue mm-hmm. if I do this jobs. And I love doing it. So that helps me to really finalize, like, I'm not going to go back. This is my end. But actually, there's one time I quit and I actually went back. Because, of course, you're starting just to be an entrepreneur and then yeah. understanding everything. And then, you know, like, you're having problems with financial. And then, like, you thought, like, the only way I can probably get money again is if I work back again. And I did went back. Mm-hmm. And during the second time I went back, I really realized that this is not really for me anymore. I felt like I love performing, but the things going on around me, I thought, like, this is not what I want anymore. And that's how I stopped and pivot to my career.
But that's quite nice, though, because that's the realization that you made the right decision in the first place, mm-hmm. reinforcing that for you.
Yes, exactly.
But when you quit mm-hmm. the first time, were you like, I'm leaving, I'm not coming back? And then was it really hard to come back?
I didn't do it in that way. So I did it also like, I am quitting, but I didn't tell them like what I want to do. I just told them like, I'm just going to quit. And then I went to the same place. So I talked to the owner and I told, like, I'm having financial problems. And then she was just like, come back. Then you can come back anytime you want. And she was just so nice to have me back. And then that's how I came back again. Yeah.
not an interesting story for a podcast. And so when you look back on that time, when you look back at Tiffany, when she just moved to Japan in the late 90s, what do you feel about her?
Ooh, I feel like she chose the right path. I was, because I had a boyfriend. I had a boyfriend in the Philippines. And I have to leave him. And he was, and
should we say hello to him now?
hello, ex-boyfriend.
Hi.
So we were madly in love. And I thought, like, and he even helped me. And he was so positive about, like, how the relationship will still continue, even though we're going to do it in a long-distance relationship, which I found out that it's not going to actually work. But yeah, like, it was a hard decision for me to really pick if I have to stay in the Philippines for my relationship and just continue studying in college, or why not try a new life in Japan? And maybe I get to see what those trans women that I was admiring and figure out, you know, what, because I want to be like them. And it happened. So I think I did a smart decision about that.
And if she was here now, so she's time traveled to the future and she's sitting mm-hmm. with us, there's three of us here. I hope this mm-hmm. makes sense. I tend to waffle on a bit. Uh-huh. If she was here now, what advice do you think she would give you?
Okay, you're like my therapist. Like, the questions that you ask me are like my therapist. But yeah, like, if she's going to be here, the advice I'm just going to give her is...
No, she's giving you. She's giving you.
Oh, giving me advice?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
If she's going to give me advice. Ooh, opposite. I think my old self would probably tell me now that I had an amazing transformation and the life that I created now is the life that she wanted to have, like, during that time since I was 19.
And what advice would you give her?
Trust the process and have no fear. I mean, I think there was a lot of fear and also worries that I had back then. although at the end, I still managed to pick the right path that I wanted. So I guess like just trusting the process will probably make me more easier for me to think about everything.
And are there any of those fears that you had then that you still hold on to?
I can say that now that I don't have him anymore, I made clear...
None.
With the help of my therapist, with this, I think, or maybe only one. I think you're right. Maybe one. Maybe this, the conversation probably that I'm going to have with my parents. Because I didn't have the conversation with them about the time when I was a child, when they got divorced. Because I have all that. It's a trauma, right? Like everything was trauma. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have conversations with them about it. And then my gender identity, the life that I wanted where they didn't support me. I don't want to go back there and tell them that why. I'd rather want to let them know that I did try to understand them, that they didn't have the understanding of how to support me and who I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have that conversation yet with them.
Why?
Because it's not easy for my mom, because my mom, like I said, I didn't grow up with her. Mm-hmm. She has this mentality of whatever she is thinking for us, for me and my siblings, is always right.
Yeah.
And I understand that because she wants the better future for me and my siblings. But it's not the life that we want to have, right? We want to have the life that we want. So I don't think she has that understanding. And it's not going to be easy for her to let her understand that, I guess, now in this moment. With my dad, I started to like talk a little bit. Because he lives in the Philippines, I think I have to see him in person and talk to him. I think with my dad, it's going to be easy because I'm more closer than my father, than my mother.
Yeah.
So with my dad, I'm not going to be having problems to talk to him when I go back to the Philippines. But with my mom, I am not seeing it soon yet. I'm still trying to let her understand my boundaries with her and me, and getting that timing where I can really have the conversation with her.
It's so fascinating, your relationship with your parents, isn't it? Because they're like the people who know you the best out of the entire whole world, but they're also the people that it's hardest to be yourself around.
Yes, exactly.
You revert to this like preteen or early teen angsty individual when you were around them, and they know just how to manipulate every single word you're saying.
Yes, the word manipulate,
and
exactly.
Twist it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's fascinating how you navigate that.
There, I would also say there's a lot of Filipino mentality in the culture. They're very into family. We don't put boundaries. There's no boundary between family, which is such... I'm now understanding everything because I'm learning about boundaries, but it's difficult because they don't understand boundaries.
And if you're establishing a boundary, that makes you difficult.
Exactly. How is it with UK though? Like, how's your relationship with your family?
I think I probably have a lot of the same things as you. Like, I don't have a bad relationship with my family, but I do find it difficult to talk about things with them. And I don't know. There's a layer of defensiveness in there because, you know, if you're ever critical of anything that they've done, it's a quick leap to, we did the best that we could. And of course you did the best that you could. And like, no one is disputing that, but that doesn't mean that there are things that didn't go well for me. I can still react to that without diminishing the fact you did the best that you could. Mm-hmm. And so I think, yeah, we then end up in this kind of locking horns position quite quickly. And then the easiest thing to do is to step away from that conversation and then not finish it. So I think there's kind of lots of unresolved things going on there.
Yeah, it's absolutely. The same thing with me. And the term that you put their defensiveness is what I also get from my mom.
And it's really like, how do you unlock that? Like, how do you stop that? I don't know. It's really difficult.
I also thought that maybe when the timing comes, when they're ready to talk to you about it, that's when the right time that they will probably understand you more. Hopefully, like, they're still alive, you know, when that happens. But, you know,
But it's all, like, learned behavior, right? Like, I mean, obviously, every single interaction that we have with the outside world is a learned behavior. But, like, in my case, my parents have learned from their parents not to talk about their feelings. And so they don't want to talk about their feelings. And in lots of ways, that's passed down to me as well. Although, I guess, the external influences have altered that slightly. But if you've been taught and programmed and socialized not to talk about your feelings, at what point do you suddenly go, oh, actually, I'm going to talk about my feelings? Or is it just not possible?
You're absolutely right. I was raised not to talk about feelings. It's not easy to have those conversations with her, especially with her, with my mom. So, yeah, I'm just going to wait for that moment when she probably just starts to bring it up, and then I'll say what I can say in a polite way, I guess. Not like, well, there's this one time when I had a massive fight with my mom, so I don't want to repeat that again.
Yeah. But it's, and this, again, this is me imposing my thought process on your situation, so I might be wrong. But it's weird when you're spending a lot of energy protecting the emotions of someone else who's supposed to be protecting you.
Yeah, yeah. That's how I work with my therapy, with my therapist. Okay. Helps me a lot.
Sorry, we weren't supposed to get to this level of depth.
I love it. I love this conversation. So, yeah.
Do you have any memories of Mr. Lady or clubbing from your own queer scene or your host or hostess scene? Is that a scene or is it just individual bars? I don't know. Anyway, that you want to share. Well, if you do, I would love to hear all about it. So why not get in touch? I want to create the biggest online record of people's memories and stories of queer clubbing, but I need your help. Go to lostspacespodcast.com and find the section Share a Lost Space to tell me all about what it is you got up to. You can also reach out to me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where my handle is Lost Spaces Pod. Find out more about Tiffany by following her on Facebook at Official Tiffany Rossdale or Instagram at Tiffany Rossdale Official. See, they're swapped around there. Got to be careful. Or by visiting her website, tiffanyrossdale.com. And all of these links are in the show notes for this episode. If you enjoyed this episode, you know what I'm going to say, don't you? I would really appreciate if you subscribed, left a review on your podcast platform, or just told other people who you think might be interested in giving it a little listen too. My name is Kay Anderson, and you have been listening to Lost Spaces.